This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. Some books are to be tasted, others to be swallowed, and some few to be chewed and digested. That was Francis Bacon's comment about 500 years ago. Hard to digest a Kindle or Nook, though. Well, Bacon's comments were figurative. Most of us in 2010 would agree with the writer. The greatest compliment to an author would be to say that you digested her book. Hope the paper was high in fiber. This hour, we'll find out what books Iowans have been buying of late, and we'd like to hear what our listeners have been reading this spring. Do you still feel the romance of the printed book, or are you happy with the portable screen on the Sony Reader? This hour, we welcome back booksellers from two of Iowa's independent stores, Prairie Lights in Iowa City and Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. Jan Weissmiller, Paul Ingram, and Alice Meyer will have some spring reading ideas. We'd like to hear yours, too. Talk of Iowa in 5 minutes following news. This is Talk of Iowa for this Monday. I'm Dennis Reese. People often compare the book industry to the music industry, where digital sales have overtaken sales of CDs, but there is an emotional connection to books. The head of Penguin Publishing, John Makinson, says, "We need to keep the emphasis on the reader's emotional relationship with the book. It's still important to produce a well-designed, beautifully printed book that looks good on a shelf and that you can gift to a friend." So apparently people still want to put their hands on an actual book. We're going to be talking about books today, both printed and electronic, on our spring book program. And we welcome back into the studio, the Iowa Public Radio studio in Iowa City, Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller from Prairie Lights Books in downtown Iowa City. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And in our Iowa Public Radio studio in Des Moines is Alice Meyer from Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
Hi, Alice.
Hi, Alice.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Jan.
So, do people still want to put their hands on a printed book? I hope you're going to say yes.
Yeah.
We do.
Yeah.
Okay. I do.
I agree.
We can convince some people to.
Well, people are still buying books. We had this terrible recession, and I'm sure, everybody said, well, nobody has extra income to spend on little fun things that that they really want. They're just not purchasing. But we're bouncing back. How are things going in the independent bookstores? Paul, Jan?
Well, we're selling books.
Good.
Yeah, we are. And the same people that have always bought them are buying them and praising them and telling us that no mechanical device is going to be worth taking to bed at night.
Okay.
Take it on an airplane, but not to bed.
Yeah, right.
Well, since the Kindle came out, now we have the Sony Reader and we have the Barnes & Noble Nook. I think it's called the Nook, right?
We don't keep track of of all the detail on that stuff.
You don't care.
Right. If it's not a book, forget it.
I don't know. I've seen people using them sitting in waiting rooms and so forth, but it just doesn't feel right to me, to look at an electronic screen when you're reading a novel.
It looks more like a phone call.
There was a lovely article right after J.D. Salinger died Joshua Ferris, and he was sitting in a restaurant, and there was a copy of he had brought a copy of Catcher in the Rye, and the waiter really wanted to talk about it, and he talked about how important the Catcher in the Rye had been to him, and he finally ended the conversation by saying, "Now I have a Kindle and I have all my books on those." And Joshua Ferris said, "And sadly, had there been a Kindle on the table, we would never have had this discussion."
What do you think, Alice? Do you agree?
Well, I do agree. And I think, you talk about not taking it to bed with you. I'm thinking of how many times I have actually dropped a book while I've fallen asleep taking it to bed. And what would that do to your Kindle if you keep dropping it?
It's a more expensive drop.
I think so. I think so.
$300 a drop.
Yeah. And I'd have to say, going back to your comparison to the music industry as well, if you look at that right now, I have a couple of sons who are in their 20s, and they're going back to vinyl because of the superior quality of the sound, and they like having the big records, in their stacks, and what goes around comes around. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk books this hour. We'd love to hear from our listeners and find out what you're reading. It is a toll-free line to connect with us here at Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa, 866-780-9100. Again, 866-780-9100. Or the email is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I just happened to go to the New York Times bestseller list, and I think this is the first time this has ever happened. The book I'm currently reading, and I know a lot of other people are reading this same book, is number two. That's never happened to me, The Help by Catherine Stockett. Mm-hmm. Jan, I know you have read the book, and do you like it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fabulous. I'm not done yet, but it's one of those you just can't put down. And it's really is being read widely across the country now, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We it's hard to keep it on the shelf. I mean, really, the people, and it's, as they say in the business, it has legs. People keep buying it and buying it as word of mouth continues, I think.
They say it's the biggest book club, the book being read by most book clubs in the country right now.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, really? I always like to look and see what printing the book is in, and mine is in its 56th printing. So yeah. It has to be doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Alice, are you familiar with the book? What do you think?
Oh, yeah. It has been a bestseller for us. And, yeah, like Jan said, book clubs just are going crazy over it. There's a lot in it to discuss. Book clubs of a certain age can remember back to that time period and like to talk about it. It does have legs.
Set in about 1962 in that
1962,
era.
Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. And we should mention that Catherine Stockett will be reading at the Iowa City Public Library. When is that, Jan?
It is this coming Sunday, May 2nd at 2 p.m.
And there should be a great crowd there for that. This is a first novel, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did she do this?
Yeah.
Well, she has an MFA from the University of Alabama, and she spent 9 years working on it, I think.
Mm-hmm. And she was probably there's probably an element of luck in it. But she got the right publicity. It hit the right note.
It was published
for a lot of adults, you know.
Right. It was published right after. It was published in February of 2009, so that would have been right sort of as Obama was being inaugurated. So that must have had an influence,
I'm sure,
on the way it was received.
It had an influence, yeah.
And, you know, I'm talking to her also on Thursday live at 10 o'clock on Talk of Iowa for the first half hour. So I'm looking forward to this very much. You know, it was Catherine Perkins. Every time she hands me a book and says, "You got to do this," I always, of course, the first thing I look at is the number of pages. She hands me the book Friday and says, "You can talk to Catherine Stockett on Thursday." And I'm looking at the book. It's 450 pages, and I'm thinking, "Oh no!"
Mm-hmm. Just goes to show one page is not always the same
no.
as another.
No.
And so I started this weekend and have not been able to put it down. It's a fantastic book. Well, let's recommend some other books. We've already talked about The Help, which is just a fabulous book by Catherine Stockett. What else do you have? Do you want to start, Paul?
Okay. One of the things I wanted to do, we have certain – there are certain customers, I'm sure every store has, who will buy a hardbound mystery, but only a hardbound mystery of a certain quality or of – certain people will just die until the next in a series will come out. And I just wanted to mention a few of the brand new ones that just came out that are popular and quite wonderful. Benjamin Black, the Irish writer who wrote Christina Fall and Silver Swan, has written Elegy for April. There's a new Elizabeth George. There's a new Martha Grimes Richard Jury mystery called Black Cat that her fans are legion. Donna Leone, the one who writes about Venice, has Question of Belief. Denise Mina has the great Glasgow writer, has a a nice literary novel called Still Midnight. Thomas Perry has the funniest book he's written in a long time called Strip, about a bunch of goofy strip club owners who keep getting into trouble and walking, getting in each other's way. And Jacqueline Winspear has one that's out just in the last couple of weeks. This is the sort of flapper from the time of World War I into the 20s, The Mapping of Love and Death. And Alan Bradley, my favorite, as you'll remember from last time, he did The Sweetness at the Bottom of the Pie, where we have our 11-year-old girlfriend. Our girlfriend. My God.
Those strip club owners.
Erase that. Erase that.
We're alive, Paul. I can't erase it.
where we have an 11-year-old detective who takes serious advantage of the fact that an 11-year-old girl is almost always ignored. And so she just listens. And she's very funny. And her Canadian author, Alan Bradley, who now lives in Malta, is planning to do six of them all together. So these are ones that have just come out in hardback that are I know a lot of people really love, and they're worth having in hardbound.
Okay. Just a couple of minutes before break, I want to get to Jan, then we'll go to Alice, and then we have a bunch of callers waiting. We'll get to all of the callers after the break. But Jan, what do you have?
Well, if we're going to stick with fiction for now, I've got the collected stories of Deborah Eisenberg, and Deborah Eisenberg is she's a short story writer who has been publishing what seemed like slowly for 20 years, but now we have this very large 800-page collection of her short stories, and I find them so insightful and so funny and so memorable that I often think of lines from her stories just to help me through my days.
Well, it's good to have them all in one collected.
Yeah,
volume.
Exactly.
One more book quickly. We'll take a break. What else do you want to recommend, Jan?
Oh, well, I also brought the new and selected poems of Robert Hass. It's Poetry Month, and his new and selected poems is called The Apple Trees at Olema. He is a California poet who became well-known among poets in the 1970s for his book Praise, and has continued to write beautiful and accessible poems that are emotionally complex and often have to do with nature. Ecology is a huge subject for him now.
We have to take a break. Just hold on. We'll be back in a minute as Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. It's Spring Book Day, and we have three booksellers from two of Iowa's independent bookstores, Paul Ingram, Jan Weissmiller from Prairie Lights in Iowa City, and Alice Meyer from Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. Let's go next to Alice, who's at our Iowa Public Radio studio in Des Moines. What do you have to recommend this morning, Alice?
Well, I'm going to start off with a well-known Iowa guy, Peter Hedges. His new book is The Heights, which refers to that neighborhood in Brooklyn in New York City. We have two characters here, Tim and Kate Welch, who live with their two young sons in a brownstone that they can't really afford, with a closet that's called the second bedroom. Tim is a history teacher at a private high school, and Kate stays at home with their two sons. And they start hearing speculation in the neighborhood that somebody has purchased the most expensive piece of real estate in the area. Everybody, of course, is wondering who it is. And it's a woman named Anna Brody in her family. And for some strange reason, she and Kate meet, and Anna decides that she is just going to anoint Kate to be part of her circle, and they They start with a series of play dates with their kids and coffees and dinners. Meanwhile, Tim and Kate are struggling with their house payments and everything, and Kate is offered a job from an old colleague of hers that just offers this wonderful salary. So the couple decides that Kate will now be the breadwinner and Tim will stay home with the kids while he finishes his dissertation. So the roles are now reversed, and the relationship with Anna is also reversed. And it just starts this dangerous dance of who's doing what next. And characters are forced into making choices that they either have to live with or deal with the consequences. And it's to Peter Hedges' credit, I think. He is just so skilled and subtle a writer that as you're kind of seeing the characters go down this road, you're not even seeing it yourself. You're not even saying, no, don't do that. You know, can't you see what's going on? It just sneaks up on you. It's just a really well-written book, and I would recommend that.
You told me on the phone earlier that you've been reading lots of great books lately, so I'm glad you've been having time to do that, Alice, and really finding a lot of great books out there. It's fabulous.
There are a lot of great books out there.
Yeah. Let's go to some of our callers next. Paula is calling from Ames. Good morning, Paula. And let's see if she's there. Hold on. Yes, Paula, you're there.
Yes,
right?
I'm here. Hi. I teach graphic design. I teach book publication design, and I find this conversation very interesting, primarily because one of the things we're concerned with is both print but also digital. And I'm reading currently The End of Print, which talks about the different way of receiving information. And there's an interesting acronym that they use for the word book, and that is Box of Organized Knowledge, which I think quite that's one point. The other point, I had a conversation with my 84-year-old father yesterday, who is suffering from macular degeneration, and his ability to read his 7 books a week is declining. And he said, I've heard about this thing called the Kinder. And he said, and I hear you can make the type bigger. And he said, I think I'm going to go to the library and see if they have one. And so he was, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, so he was actually talking about the Kindle.
Yeah.
He's thinking about it in ways I think some of us have not been thinking about, and that is the ability to serve people who may not be served by regularly printed books or even the paucity of large printed books.
Good point.
Yeah, that is a good point. And the article that I quoted from earlier made that point, that's one reason it is selling to a segment of the population, because you can't enlarge the print. So that's a valid point about the Kindle.
There is another point too about the idea of I do think that in the not so distant future we will receive a lot of our printed information through digital means, and I know my students are quite interested in that, and that's how a lot of them receive that information. But I do think that there'll be a bottleneck going from print to digital. You know, we will lose some books. Same thing happened in the Middle Ages when we went from manuscripts to printing with movable type. So I think that's a consideration as well.
Well, Paula, thanks a lot for the call. A Box of Organized
Knowledge.
Knowledge, right. Yeah, that's fabulous. Thank you. Thanks
awesome.
A lot for the call.
All right,
appreciate
thank
it.
You. All right, bye.
Bye. Let's go next to Dennis in Ankeny. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning. The book I'm recommending is one that I've just started reading. It's called The Sandbox, written by writer David Zimmerman. And he's an Iowa writer. He was just, his novel was, it's a fictional Iraqi war novel that follows a squad in Iraq and all the things that they go through. It was just reviewed by New York Times' Joel Turnipseed, I think last Sunday, and gave it a favorable review. Turnipseed was I think from the Gulf War, and he'd written a book called Baghdad Express. But this is a great novel. It's brilliantly written, and it was. He's going to come. The novelist is going to come and speak to my writing class tonight at DMAC.
Oh, wow!
And talk to the students about interview. He was gathered a lot of his source information to create this book from Iraqi soldiers who had returned from tours. So it's a great book.
Tell us his last name again.
David Zimmerman.
Okay, David Zimmerman and the Sandbox. Paul, it sounds like you're familiar with.
He's a professor up at Iowa State.
He teaches at Iowa State,
And he'll be at Prairie Lights in June.
Oh, okay. Great.
Very good.
Thanks a lot. Really appreciate the call, Dennis. Calling 866-780-9100. You guys can all chime in if you want to between calls if you have something you want to say. And if you don't, that's fine. We'll go next to Jay in Cedar Rapids. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning.
What do you have to tell us?
I'm also a graphic design teacher out of Cedar Rapids. And like Paula, I was going to say that there are many of the relevant ways to look at the technology to keep it growing so that it's useful to us, but then also to not turn our backs completely on the fact that as a graphic designer, I'm teaching students to look at how things lay on the page and these things that can't be embodied by the technology either. The big thing that's alarming to me, though, is to have people trying to pick sides and polarize the argument. I think that there's a relevance for each one of them. Like my wife is a nurse, and so when she works in the ER, there's the electronic tablet is very useful there because they can shuffle papers quickly, cleanly. You know, the workflow is a lot faster, and it has its place there. But then, you know, how do you show a beautiful high resolution photograph? You need a book. Each one has their relevance.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good point you make, although I hear the iPad is supposed to add a lot to the graphics and color at some. I haven't seen an iPad yet. Have you?
No.
Do you want to? Whatever.
Oh, I'm sure I'll see one once.
I'm sure it has its place. I don't particularly like the idea of being able to go onto Wikipedia at any second and email, you know, because I think no one will ever actually get lost in a book if they have that.
Yeah.
You know, at least the Kindle is dedicated.
Right. Yeah. Jay, thanks.
Also the place where you can check Doppler radar on an electronic.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you get into a boring passage in your book, you can quickly check Doppler radar.
Yeah.
Sometimes Doppler radar is really exciting, especially
Dostoevsky will not give you Doppler radar.
I just hope that people don't try to polarize the argument so much and that look for the relevance for both of them. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Jay, for that call. 866-780-9100. We'll have to take a break in a minute. Let's go back to Alice and see if Alice has one more book for us here before the break. Alice?
I do. I actually have one by another Iowa author named Peter Bagnani. The title of his first novel is The House of Tomorrow, which is about a 16-year-old orphan who lives with his grandmother in Iowa's only geodesic dome. And she is a disciple of Buckminster Fuller, and she is training Sebastian in his principles. And as a result, Sebastian is pretty much secluded from the outside world. They give tours of their dome to outsiders, and one day while they're giving a tour to some townspeople, Nana has a stroke, and these people take Sebastian under their wing. The son and the family.
Alice, we have to take a break. Give us the title and author just quickly once more.
House of Tomorrow by Peter Bagnani.
Okay, we'll be back in 5 minutes following the Environment Report as Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese, and it's our spring book program. And with me in the studio in Iowa City is Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller from Prairie Lights Books in downtown Iowa City. And at our Iowa Public Radio studio in Des Moines, Alice Meyer of Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. Jan Weissmiller, you had a very special customer a few weeks ago.
We just sort
of walked in your store. I won't mention his name, but he is the president of the United States. Tell us about that. Just did you guys have any advance warning, or how much advance warning did you have that President Obama was going to be shopping at Prairie Lights?
We had 2 minutes.
Two minutes.
Yeah. a Secret Service man came in and while I was on the telephone and said he needed to talk to me. And I said, it'll be just a minute. I'm on the phone. And he said, I think you might want to talk to me. I'm from the White House and you have a visitor. So, of course, I hung up. And then he said, 2 minutes, act natural.
I just can't imagine.
And everybody ran up to the front and ran back. And
but the amazing thing was I felt, you know, completely weak in the knees and petrified. And the minute he walked in, I felt great. He's very, he really puts you at ease. I mean, he has a wonderful presence.
He just beamed at us in this wonderful way.
And of course,
we beamed back, you know.
And what did he buy?
He bought books for his daughters. He said, I want to get some books for Sasha and Malia. And I said, so I'll take you to the kids' books. And he said, well, Malia doesn't necessarily think she's a kid. But he went down there because she is 11 and bought The Secret of Zoom by Lynn Janelle and Journey to the River Sea by Eva Abbotson. And they were recommended to him, I think, by Victoria Walton, who works for us.
And it's a great recommender.
Yeah, because he wanted a hand sell. And he came back upstairs and said that he had been given these recommendations by his independent bookstore, and now he was going to take them home and see if they met the test. We have not heard.
But it's nice to hear the President of the United States say the words independent bookstore.
That's right. In his speech also. That he paid with cash, I understand.
Yeah.
And when he left, he gave this wave like high-o silver. It was wonderful.
He also bought the Star Wars pop-up book for his press secretary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there happens to be a new book out about President Obama. Jan, I see it's sitting in your stack there on the top.
There are actually many, but this one is very substantial. It's by David Remnick, who's the editor of The New Yorker, and it's called The Bridge, which is a quote from John Lewis that Barack Obama is what stands at the bridge, at the end of the bridge in Selma. And it's really a very thorough look at what allowed him to get to where he is now. And it's a particularly interesting look at racial politics in Chicago. I guess he went to Chicago after he finished. He went to Harvard Law School. He went to Occidental College, which was, I think, in Hawaii, and not a great college, and came out of college without a lot of direction. And so he went to Chicago and worked as a community organizer on the South Side and was successful and understood that he had a certain kind of power, and went to Harvard Law School, where he was the first first African-American editor of the Harvard Law Review, which I didn't realize what a big deal that was until I read this book. Because I'm not in law school, I guess I wouldn't have thought about it. But it was a sort of a huge thing. And then he went back to Chicago after that, met Michelle, and, you know, was elected to the Illinois State Senate. But it's a very interesting look at politics in Chicago, because, you know, Jesse Jackson was still there and the Black Panther movement had morphed, and they were more radical and less pragmatic. Obama's, you know, relatively pragmatic, and that's a dangerous stance. It may, in the end, I think, help him to get a lot done. I really think that if we look at what he has accomplished already, it's a lot. And he's taking this big stance on finance reform right now. And anyway, the book is very detailed and really brings together both his personal life and his political life in a fascinating way.
Well, let's move on to Paul. Paul is dying to talk about mysteries.
I gave the mysteries real quick at the first thing, but I've got a really incredible novel that I think is my favorite so far this season. It's called Parrot and Olivier in America.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought that was on the mysteries list, and it's not.
No, okay. It's by Peter Carey, mm-hmm. who is an Australian writer who lives in New York City and is one of the best writers in the world. He's won 2 Booker Prizes. He's won numerous other prizes. And this is one of his extraordinary historical novels. It starts out in the French Revolution, and you've got 2 kids, a rich kid who's about to get his head cut off, and a poor kid who's come over as a printer's devil with his father to help print up the money for the new revolution. One of the things that Cary has done is he's just done delicious homework. He has found so many kind of interesting, wonderful things out of the past. And they're not in France long. Olivier has to get on the other side of the river to save his head. Mm. And for reasons I won't tell you because I want you to read the book, Parrot gets over there too. And of course they run into each other. And they have a grand, picaresque adventure. And the character of Olivier is based on Alexis de Tocqueville, the great French traveler in America who sent word back to Europe as to what was going on. And so you alternate chapters between the rich kid and the poor kid. And sometimes both of them are involved and sometimes only one of them is involved. But the writing sounds like 19th century writing.
Really?
And it's,
oh, I love that.
And that is just so good.
Yeah.
Such pleasure to read.
Peter Cary, Parrot and Olivier in America. Highly recommended by Paul. I want to go to an email. Judy in Cedar Rapids is writing her favorite book of late, The Help, and we talked about that. And a lot of people love that book now. The Poet Mistress, Sarah's Key, The Book Thief. She loved that.
Poetic. I love The Book Thief. That's a wonderful book, yeah.
She says it's poetic, elegant, heart-wrenching, engrossing. It's now among my top 2. Beryl Markham's West with the Night is still number 1.
Hmm. Well, the thing about The Book Thief is that it's mostly sold in young adult sections, but it's just a wonderful book for adults.
Well, let's go next to Alice back at in our Des Moines studio. Alice, what's next on your list? I know you've have a lot of favorites.
Next on my list is the new one by Lionel Shriver titled So Much for That. And the main character in this book is named Shep Nacker. And he has it all figured out that if you plan to retire to a third world tropical country, you can do it cheaper and you can get there earlier. So he sells his business and his home, only to find himself 10 years later still working for that business and renting a home. And one day he just comes home and he's ready to go with or without his wife and son. However, she comes home, his wife, one day with the news that she has a devastating illness and now she needs the health insurance. So thus begins a tale of health insurance hell as he finds out that the health insurance that he thought he had really isn't a good plan. There's deductibles, co-payments, out-of-pocket, out-of-network, and they just begin this spiral. And you see his portfolio going down with each chapter.
Well, this is a book that's especially relevant for right now.
Right,
exactly.
Maybe the Senate read it.
Yeah.
So, and Shriver, she kind of skewers the whole healthcare system while she's doing this too, and the corporations that run it. And you know, you see this couple in their doctor's appointments and trying to figure out how they're going to get the care that they need. And you know, there's a couple of other health dramas going off on the side with some other characters, and it's just a relevant and good book.
Good okay, for Tyler. Lionel Shriver.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to a caller. Tom is calling from Urbana. Good morning, Tom.
This is Tori.
Tori, I'm sorry. Yeah, anyway, you're on the air.
I just wanted to comment on Catherine Stockett's book. She got it absolutely right. My father is Dr. Charles Neal in the book.
Really?
My family and the Stockets are very close, were very close, still are.
Wow.
And her father, Catherine's father and mother, and I all went to high school together.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing.
That is truly amazing.
And you're in Urbana, Iowa.
And I'm in Urbana, Iowa. I've had more fun seeing people reading the help in airports and other places and telling them that I'm the son of Dr. Charles Neal in the book.
Do you ever sign any copies?
And just think if they were reading it on...
I haven't seen Catherine in a long time. I got her email address from her mother, and I'm gonna let her know that my wife and I will be in Iowa City at the library.
Oh, good.
Good for you.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I hope to see her there.
You will.
And, you will. You'll have a chance, yeah.
At first, my sister-in-law saw her at a book signing in Jackson, and she was upset. She thought we'd be mad that she'd used my father in the book. We were so pleased, you know. It was just great because my father and her grandfather were the best of friends.
Mm. Wow.
They would go to these horse shows and buggy shows together, and they were great pals. So we were very pleased to see Dad in the book, even though she spelled the name differently.
Okay. Well, you know.
Well, Tori, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
I just thought I'd call and comment. That's great.
That's great, yeah.
Thanks so much.
And I really love it. And a great bookstore there, too. Keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you.
And don't forget Catherine Stockett at Iowa City Public Library, 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. Gretchen is next in Muscatine. Good morning, Gretchen.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that you guys, as Paul might say, are also deliciously fun to listen to.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I my husband and I just wrapped up the sixth book, Echo in the Bone by Diana Gabaldon last night. We've been reading that series out loud.
Mm. Is that the most recent series?
Yes, that's the latest book, and you know it's been The Outlander is the first,
right?
And for all those people who have never opened its historical romance, but what an adventure! We just have had more fun with that book.
What's the name of the last?
Echo in the
last one.
Echo in the Bones.
Okay.
Yes. So I think we have a couple more years, and then there's one more she's got planned to write. So anyway, that's a fun one for all of those out there who haven't read those.
Okay, great. Give me the author's name once more so we can, I'm writing all this
Diana Gabaldon.
Okay, great. Oh, thanks so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah,
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. That was Gretchen calling from Muscatine. Let's go to Rick in Iowa City. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. This is more of a general book question than anything else. Within the last month, Keith Olbermann on Friday nights has been reading shorter pieces from James Thurber. And it came from reading Thurber to his father as he was dying in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I both know Mr. Thurber's granddaughter. And as we were watching it, we were wondering, he's probably introducing Thurber to almost a whole new generation of readers.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if book sales in either of the two Iowa bookstores have seen any change in the purchases of Thurber's works or not.
We haven't.
No, but it might pick up. What about you, Alice?
Yeah, Alice?
No, I can't say that I have.
Where does his granddaughter live? Did you say, Rick?
She's here in Iowa. I think she kind of likes to keep her identity somewhat quiet. But Olbermann has mentioned both her mother and herself in allowing him to read. And it's really a nice way to end the news show. It's about the last 5 minutes. And he just sits in a chair like Alistair Cook and reads fables.
Well, that's good to know. I haven't seen that, but that's good to know. Thanks, Rick.
And they're very funny stories.
Yeah, they certainly
My father
are.
Loved them and read them to me.
Yeah, he read them to me, too. My
and
father
we,
read them
we have some broadsides in Prairie Lights, some letterpress broadsides of some Thurber things.
Yeah.
866-780-9100. Let's go next to Carol in Mount Vernon. Carol, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to know, I'm calling about Stieg Larsson, S-T-I-E-G, I believe it is, Swedish writer. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was his first book.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know if the third of his series is available.
May 25th.
Yeah, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest.
Hornet's Nest, okay.
Yeah.
That's what it's called. And
goes on sale May 25th.
Yeah.
Okay, I missed it when I was in London, and I would have loved to have. I should have gotten it then, I guess.
I just saw the movie of the first part, which is wonderful. They've done a really good job.
When was the movie locally?
At the Bijou.
It was at the student film place, and it's a Norwegian film, with subtitles, or a Swedish film with subtitles. And they found a fantastic person to play Lisbeth Salander, which they couldn't have done. They couldn't have made the movie if they hadn't found the right person.
Right. I'm sure that's true. Well, I'd love to have an opportunity to see the movie sometime.
Well, I think you will.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot for that call. Carol from Mount Vernon, and I don't know how many books we got through, Jan and Paul, on your stack on the table. Okay, I know there's something you're dying to talk about, Jan. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about Adam Hazlitt's novel Union Atlantic, which is about the financial meltdown, and so it may not be a perfect novel, but it's very engrossing, and it features a guy named Doug Fannin that gets involved in that is one of the big figures in Lehman Brothers.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And there the head of the New York Fed is fictionalized here, and he has a sister. The guy that is the fictional head of the New York Fed has a sister named Charlotte, who's sort of an aging hippie who talks to her dogs, and she's sort of a wonderful foil for these people that are involved in the financial meltdown. And
so a novel about the financial meltdown.
Yeah.
And it's good.
It is good, yeah. It's by Adam Hazlitt, and it's called Union Atlantic.
Okay, Paul.
Books about talking dogs are really in this year.
Really?
No, there's a great mystery called Dog on It, and they're the... It's the Chet and Bernie mysteries, and Chet is a dog, and Bernie is a detective. And Bernie flunked out of police school, and Chet flunked out of police dog school. And the vision of this dog is just bouncing up and down all the time. You know, this is going to be a great day. I'm going to eat some hamburger. He knows what his boss does, and he loves him for it.
And then there's another talking dog book, too. I Thought You Were Dead by Peter Nelson.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's sort of a...
That's a funny talking dog book.
It's sort of a serious talking dog book.
Yeah. It has good jokes, but in the end, he's trying for a tear.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a... but he'll be...
He read last Monday.
He read last
the
Monday.
The dog is the most sensible person in his life.
Yeah, the dog is very sensible.
I want to get one more call in. There's Pat and Wellman. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. I'm calling about a book. The title is The Weight of Silence. It's written by a first-time author from Dubuque, Iowa. Her name is Heather Gudenkauf. And actually, she was interviewed by Public Radio a few months ago. This book has been a New York Times bestseller for many weeks, and she is up for the Edgar Award, which will be awarded this week in New York.
Oh, great. I didn't know that.
She was
at Prairie Lights in November.
Yeah.
Yes, she was.
Mm-hmm.
It's a suspenseful story about two girls who go missing, one a selective mute. It's just a really gripping family drama. It's a page-turner, another one that is really hard to put down.
Uh-huh.
I highly recommend it.
And so that book is up for the Edgar Allan Poe Award.
It is fabulous.
Which is a big deal.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Pat. Appreciate the call.
Thank you so much.
Want to get one more book in from Alice before our time runs out. Alice?
Well, if I could go back to a book from last year that I thought was overlooked, that was really one of my favorite books of the year. The title is How the Soldier Repairs the Gramophone.
Ah, I love that.
Did you? Oh,
it's incredible.
Isn't it great? Did you sell a lot of that?
I hand sold it. A lot of people didn't. You know, it has an interesting title, but you have to explain it a little bit. And you have to.
Yes.
Once you say that, once you start talking about Tito.
Yeah.
It becomes very interesting because he hasn't been thought of in a long time.
Right.
I mean, Tito from Yugoslavia.
When there was a Yugoslavia.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But it's just a great book told in a stream of consciousness sort of way with this living out loud family that is forced to flee Bosnia for Germany. Mm-hmm. The book is divided into three parts. Before they leave. Well, I think they do leave in the first part. The second part, the main character is actually writing to preserve memories as his grandfather told him to or asked him to. And then the third part, he goes back a few years later to visit the old country where his grandmother has remained. But just a marvelous, marvelous book.
Oh, I agree. So
you guys are so excited about
this. I feel like a soul brother to you because I had to work to sell that too.
Hey, we are out of time, unfortunately. Okay. Thanks so very much, Alice Meyer from Beaverdale Books in Des Moines. Thank you, Alice.
Thank you.
Also, Paul Ingram and Jan Weissmiller from Prairie Lights Books in Iowa City, independent bookstores. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Talk of Iowa Today, our student assistant, Rosalind Sixby. We had help from John Pemble at Iowa Public Radio in Des Moines. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Reese.